Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to U.S. National Elections 2020. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Welcome to the show, America. We're excited this evening to have a guest on our show who's running as an independent candidate for Congress in California in the 50th District. Her name is Dr. Helen Harvath. Let's welcome her to the show. Good evening.
Good evening, and thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on your show, Chauncey.
It's a blessing to have you. Can you please briefly share with the American people a little bit about who you are and how you got to the point to stand up to represent California and the American people by running for Congress?
I recognize that a congressional representative represents a district, but it requires a lot of psychological skills and business acumen and all of the things that I've learned over my lifetime. I'm a high school dropout who got a high school diploma while in the military, and then I went on to get my doctorate's degree in organizational psychology. And in the meantime, I was a marriage and family therapist in, of all places, La Plata, Maryland, and other places around the country. And through those experiences, plus 22-plus years of federal government operations experience, I have a variety of experiences in healthcare, Social Security, immigration, Department of Defense, and all of that comes together in the position. It's a federal government employee position, actually. Congressional reps are that. To get into this race, I saw things in government that needed fixing, and as an organizational development consultant, made recommendations to Department of Defense on how to save $55 to $110 million, and I helped an organization save $4 million in fiscal year 17. So I knew I could be the change. So our slogan is, be the change you wish to see in the world. And that goes back to Gandhi. But it's designed pretty much to create change in government while reducing expenditures.
I want to thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. And the one thing that stood out to me the most is you came from humble beginnings. You dropped out of school, went into the service, and you did it the right way, the hard way, and you attained your doctorate degree. Congress right now can use a good psychiatrist.
I agree.
With everything.
We can use one with the ads running in California, let me tell you. You probably have seen them on national news. And, you know, to me, this is a job interview. We have employment standards as congressional reps, once you're in office, that you must adhere to, and you should exercise those before you get into Congress. So, yes, and thank you for the acknowledgement. It's been a very interesting road. There's a lot of different biases in the community that we deal with, and I've had some very interesting comments made because I'm running and I'm the only woman running that has been in this race since August, and I pretty much have heard it all. I've heard men tell me women shouldn't run for office. I've had men tell me stories about abortion and how their wives should die instead of saving both, and so on. And so I'm listening to the community. I'm here in the community working with the community. I'm not just putting my hand out for money. I'm asking the community to support me.
And that's very important, and I want to say thank you for wanting to stand up for the public good and for the public will and serve our country. It's unfortunate that we still have people with the mindset that women should not hold public office, that women should stay home, that women should be independent thinkers. It's very sad. But it's shallow-minded people who have those thoughts, and we'll keep those individuals in our prayers. You wanted to run for Congress because you've identified issues within your congressional district. What are
yes,
some of the issues that are dramatically impacting your congressional district that made you decide to run?
Well, one of the it's so sad when we listen to Equal Rights Amendment and equal rights for men and women, because the Equal Rights Amendment is for both men and women the way it's written. It's three lines, and it basically said everybody will be equal, equal pay. And I was speaking to a Riverside County Sheriff's deputy, and he said, please get my wife equal pay. She needs a raise. And that is the fact. The issue is touted. I saw something online before I came on to speak to you about equal rights being tied to abortion. It's not. It's employment, health care, all of those quality of life issues that would improve if women had the same opportunities, the same pay. Families would be better off financially, and that would improve the issues with cost of housing. We'd be able to afford it. The Low-Income Housing Commission, I read some articles, they've had some fraud in their program, and they're giving away tax dollars for developers, yet in some areas people don't want, quote, low-income housing, so they do everything to block it. But the fraud is well-documented, and people can look that up, but it's the Low-Income Housing Commission. And then we have locally attempts for developers to have housing, and they recently took $90-some million to create bike paths through the San Diego Association of Governments. And the majority of my district is rural that I'm running for, and bike paths are not going to help us. So it's focused more towards outside of our district, and I've spoken to Kristen Gaspar, who is one of the county supervisors, because I do volunteer work for the Board of Supervisors as formerly the chair of the Military and Veterans Advisory Council. And I looked at this issue of housing, and housing in and of itself is a problem because, one, we have individual organizations who are foreign companies who come in and buy a property, and then that jacks the price up or boosts the price up of housing, and then you have people running to leave the state because of the cost of housing, the economic cost. There are jobs here, but someone who's making $50,000 a year is paying at least a third of their salary for housing. And so imagine if you're making $50,000 a year, that's almost at like a low-income poverty level in our county, unless you're single. If you have a family, it's really difficult. The other issue that is hot is the environment, and I believe in clean air, sustainable energy, things of that nature. And then we go into the issue of the Native American community. Should they continue to have tribal sovereignty? And I say yes, because Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution has a discussion about tribal sovereignty in the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And the land actually we sit on actually belonged to the First Nation before we even became a country. And then we talk about the military issues with military spouses. One of the things we're pushing for military and non-military families is there's a program we're supporting, and this is the first time I'm going to talk about it publicly, but there's a program we're supporting through Navy that will allow five major areas that include San Diego, where there's a high density of active duty families, to allow civilian families to obtain that same service based upon the number of spots available. So 50% has to go to the military from a child care provider, and then the other 50% can go to a non-military family, potentially sliding scale fee. And it would be taught and managed by Navy. So I want to support that in Congress. It's really important because in D.C., my daughter said her child care expenses are $2,000 a month. And being a single mother, she makes $2,000 a month, so it's always a challenge. And I picked this up not because of my daughter, but because of the fact that military spouses speak to me. And there's so many other things that I've covered on my platform. We have women's health care. We need term limits. We need, in Congress, we need term limits. I spoke to a former congressional rep, and she said it's one of the hardest things to pass, but that it's needed. And so that's just some of the issues. And then we deal, of course, with military sexual trauma, military sexual assault, which impacts the VA, because the benefits costs go up. If someone's sexually assaulted in the military, they'll be entitled to benefits for life based upon their disability level. And that is a boost to the cost of government. And then we turn around, in addition to that, we have federal government issues with fraud, waste, and abuse, and how do we address those? So that's why I came around and made a recommendation to Senator Gillibrand and Senator Duckworth's staff in June of this past year on how to resolve sexual assault. I had made a previous recommendation to Navy on how to save $55 to $110 million on a career transition program that costs us $411 million, excuse me, a year. So those are just some of the things that I've been working on before I even came into the picture as a candidate. And I'm bringing those issues along with what the community tells me are issues into the picture and work to resolve those quality of life and family issues.
For those that are tuning in just now, this is U.S. National Elections 2020, and we're happy and blessed to have in our studios independent candidate Dr. Helen Harvath talking about the challenges in her district of California as well as her plans for Congress. Doctor, I think that the veterans and the military have definitely been underserved in this country, and you know, you should not go to war or become a veteran and you come back and you don't have access to medical care, housing. I mean, personally, I feel that the government, anybody who serves in the military, should never have to worry about a place to live, medical care, or any of that. We should take care of the people that protect our country. And we're not doing that.
Well, in this area, I'm very proud that we have two what's called stand downs, and they're basically a community event to help veterans. I was there Friday night, Friday afternoon, and I was helping people get free clothes. And this is about community engagement and involvement. I've worked with the San Diego Board of Supervisors, as I mentioned. I also was the chair of the Military and Veterans Advisory Council. I sat on the 1VA Community Advocacy Board for the regional VA. And so I know what the issues are. And one of the issues is how long it takes to get benefits processed. They keep coming up with new ways, yet they're not addressing the key issue, which is if a person does not have the right documentation, please tell that person exactly what they need so they're not spending 7 years twiddling their thumbs or 5 years or 3 years and going back and forth attempting to get something taken care of. Individuals who have post-traumatic stress disorder have additional ailments like diabetes comes up and this Agent Orange issue, and then Blue Water Navy came up where the VA was sued by those who were in Vietnam who had different types of cancer. They finally were required by the court to manage a Blue Water Navy, and it started, I believe, in January this past month, and they were required to process claims. And so it's always a fight to get things taken care of through the benefit side of the VA. Certain VA hospitals have had issues, like in Phoenix, but they're working to resolve those. We're fortunate in San Diego that we have a wonderful VA hospital. They take good care of people. Sometimes the veterans are so cranky, though, and I've been cranky too, but we go into the hospital not feeling well, and so how do we work with the people in the hospital? So a lot of times in the VA, if you get more with honey than with vinegar. But the other part of this that's really, really great that happened this past year is the Missions Act. The Missions Act basically allows veterans with permission to go and get services outside or improve their opportunities to get services inside the hospital and inside the healthcare system. So I think that's really critical. The veterans learn how to use their Mission Act benefits, because I, for example, I was campaigning and I fell and broke my nose because the roads and infrastructure were bad where I was walking. The roads were really bad. And I fell, broke my nose, was taken to the hospital, Sharp Memorial Hospital, got a bill for slightly over $18,000. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, and I turned it over to VA. And right now, as far as I know, it's being taken care of. And so the quality of services is changing. It's improving. One of the issues, though, is how do we access those benefits? And access is key. If we can get people to understand, veterans to understand access, that's great. Carl DeMaio, one of the candidates, recommended that we send congressional reps to the VA, and that violates Title 38. So, you know, an overburdened system, do we need to overburden it more? No. What we need to do is learn to use it properly and support the VA healthcare system and make sure that there are improvements, ongoing improvements to the benefit system.
That is awesome. You have a lot in your box there that you just unpackaged.
Well, my box I'd like is pretty deep.
I realize that. We have about 8 or 9 minutes left in the show. I'd like to talk about some national issues and see what your position is on some national issues. I'm going to mention a couple, and I'll let you unpack them how you like. Some of the things you kind of mentioned, we're looking at prescription drug costs at all-time high. We're also looking at infrastructure spending. We're also looking at securing our borders and a border wall. These are some of the major issues, as well as now we could even talk about the coronavirus. I just mentioned a couple things. I'll let you, you know, pick whatever you want to talk about, and how, if you were a congressperson, what would you try to do to influence yay or nay on any of those particular topics, or what's your position on them?
Well, let me ask you, there's so many elements to infrastructure. It could be roads. It could be bridges. Mm-hmm. It could be how the government operates. So if it's the latter, if I may start there, I think this will make sense once we unpackage it. Is that okay with you? So infrastructure to me is basically how government operates. What are the different nuances of services? One of the things I would want to do is be on the House Armed Services Committee in order to unpackage the problems in the infrastructure for Department of Defense. Why spend $411 million on a program plus pay $303 million for unemployment and all of the other changes that have taken place in the last 15 to 20 years that are costing us money? We need to look at the infrastructure, break it down, follow the money, and then find out what we're actually paying for and is it of value? Because the proposal I made to Navy would actually eventually wipe out the career transition program, not in a bad way, but there are some minor tweaks that can be done by Navy, which I've explained to them, by simply doing some human resource changes while active duty. And so minor things can save a lot of money. when we look at defense spending, I support in our area Spay Wars. I go topside, which is called topside, but on Point Loma, there's the Naval Information Warfare Center, and I go up there for meetings and things like that with my company that I own. And we're invited, and we listen and learn about what's going on in Navy and defense. And so I have a profound understanding of how the government operates, and that's also tied to my military experience. But when we go to infrastructure, it could be roads also. In our area, one of the problems is SANDAG, which is the Association of San Diego Association of Government, takes money for example, the bike paths. And the roads are not getting repaired like they should. I spoke to Mayor Jones, and she is the San Marcos mayor, when I first started campaigning, and she said, we need to fix the bridges because they're going to fall down. We need to fix the roads. So between when the money leaves the federal government through either a grant or some other financial vehicle and then comes down into the state and flows down to the San Diego Government Association, it gets ripped apart because the money's not there. Then we go into the issues of Medicare, which covers prescription drugs. I'm concerned about the cost of prescription drugs because sometimes the prescription drugs in and of themselves are overpriced. And so we have to look at where the candidates are getting their money, where who's paying to support a candidate, because they may be tied to prescription drugs. I don't take any huge corporate funds. I take just small donations from the local community, and I will take money from the U.S. Women's Chamber of Commerce and also from the National Realtor Association. Those are the only two because they align with what I'm already working on with regard to roads, infrastructure, and housing. The border wall issue is very interesting. I sit 20 miles from the border, approximately, and this past year when they were trying to overrun the border from Mexico, the illegal immigrants, we want to change that. The border wall's there. It's not the best. One went up and it fell down, so I don't know how that's going to help. We need to use more technology and infrared monitoring and things like that so we can find out where the illegals are crossing. I worked for an immigration holding facility, and I know from that experience and also working for Social Security how people get across, what they do. And Social Security, when I worked for them, the illegal immigrants who had amnesty back in the 80s, they would say, oh, I got across the border this way or that way. And it's a criminal activity. So we have, for immigration, we want to change the immigration program so that it is based upon economic need. So if a person has a specific skill, for example, they're a plumber, or we need unskilled laborers like construction workers, then we allow people into the country to immigrate based on that, instead of the number system, because that's not working. And then with regard to international health care, we're a global community now. We work together to resolve issues. And that's why, for example, when I talk about human trafficking, which is what sexual assault sometimes comes from, and the military behaviors associated with that, we need to work as a global community to resolve those things. So the coronavirus, they did a really great job in bringing people in and getting them situated. There's one set of people who were impacted about 25 miles from my house. And the government's doing a great job in protecting the population. And it takes an international effort. So this brings us back to the global picture of government and how we can work together with different nations using international treaties and programs and services that overlap, and we can train each other how to be better as a society and as a community and as a global community. And I hope that answers your questions with regard to this and that it made sense to you. Is there, with regard to this, the infrastructure to me is really important because we have so much fraud, waste, and abuse. And like I said, there are some very large PACs giving money to people across the country, and these are the same people that are running the government from a federal contracting perspective. And I support business. I just don't support things that seem kind of unethical. And I hope that makes sense.
It does. We're out of time. Can you please share with the American people how they can donate, volunteer, or help your campaign in any way?
They can go to my website at Horvath, H-O-R-V-A-T-H, campaign.com, and just click on the Join Us or Contact Us site, and there's also a donate button there. And if people would like to donate, we would be very honored, and we are working for all people. We are working for the community, not for a particular party. We want to be there for the community, and I hope everyone recognizes that it's time in government to vote for people and their qualifications instead of a party, because party got us to this point where I have a dolor de cabeza, as they say in Spanish, from all the noise around me. But I'm just laser focused on moving forward, and I hope people will vote for me and support me in this effort. And thank you for having me, by the way.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We were honored and blessed to have on the show today Dr. Helen Horvath, who's running as an independent candidate in California District 50. You can follow U.S. National Elections on Facebook at U.S. National Elections. You can also follow us on Twitter at U.S. National Elections Now. Please stay tuned and join us this Wednesday for the how the Electoral College has impacted our national elections. It's going to be an exciting show. We're going to have Suffolk County from New York, Suffolk County Professor Nicholas Giordino on our show, and we're going to talk about the Electoral College. That'll be at 6 p.m. on Wednesday night. As always, we want to thank you for tuning in to U.S. National Elections. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. You can follow me at Right Talk Host on Twitter or Right Talk Radio Host on Facebook. We look forward to hearing from you and tuning into our show again, and we want to thank all of our supporters for tuning in. God bless you all, and have a good night.